So we continue in our study this morning of Mark, the Gospel of Mark. One of the reasons that we do book studies as well as topical studies is, you know, topical studies we can kind of stay what's going on in the, you know, in our community, in our world, and kind of focus on those things that might be of interest to us. But part of the other problem with topical is sometimes you just do things that you like, you know, that are the things that interest you. Now, when you do a book study and you go through it verse by verse, which we have been doing for over a year now with Mark, and of course we took some breaks from it, it makes you cover everything, even things that you're like, oh, this is such a hard passage. Why do we have to cover this one? And you know, and how do we get it down into a worship service setting like this? And chapter 13 isn't the easiest chapter in Mark to figure out. And so as you were here, if you were here last week or watching last week, we looked at chapter 13 at the beginning. The disciples wanted to know about, Jesus mentioned that the temple would be destroyed. The disciples kind of figured, oh, that probably means his kingdom's going to be set up at that time. So they wanted to know when the temple was going to be destroyed. Well, Jesus gave them a bigger answer than that. And so we looked at that last week, and we saw throughout the passage last week that Jesus told them to be on their guard and not to get sidetracked with the idea of when's the kingdom going to be set up, and he's just be doing the work that you're supposed to be doing. Don't get sidetracked. And actually, in the early church, there have been several times where the apostles had a tap down, return fever, if you will, within the church. People would stop working in anticipation that Christ was going to come back at any moment. And clearly, Jesus' teaching, the apostles' teaching, we're not supposed to be dwelling on things like that. We're supposed to just be doing what we're supposed to be doing, not taking up so much time wondering when. Well, that's the continuation of this chapter. Not being sidetracked by when, being on our guard to be doing what we're supposed to be doing. And it's just interesting how over time we have just, you know, the church is constantly being sidetracked with the question of when is it going to happen? Probably the biggest well-known case of that happened less than 10 years ago when Harold Camping, who is the president of Family Radio Christian Network, claimed that the rapture and judgment day would take place on May 21st, 2011. And that 5 months later, on October 21st, 2011, the earth and the universe would be destroyed. Some people believed in what he said so much that they spent all of their life savings in order to tell people about the coming rapture. Even his organization spent huge amount of money telling people to be ready because the rapture was coming. Well, I don't know if you noticed, but 2011 has come and gone. And when May 21st came and went, Camping said, well, actually, that was a spiritual day of judgment. It wasn't actually the rapture, but it was a day that we were spiritually judged. But the rapture and the destruction of the universe will be on October 21st. Then as that day was approaching, he finally admitted about 5 days ahead of time that he really did not know when the day was going to be. And then a year later, he acknowledged that his attempt to try to set down Christ's coming was sinful. So, you know, when these things happen, I'm always amazed, first of all, that the people in the church just fall for this. They constantly fall for this thing. And I've seen so many people have done similar things over the last 3-4 decades. The other thing that's a little annoying is that leaders do it too. And you only have to take a simple glance through the Gospels to know that this is not something that we're not supposed to become bogged down into. So we want to encourage you, if you have your Bibles, if you go ahead and open them up to Mark chapter 13, and we are going to be looking at the rest of this chapter from verse 24 all the way to 37. And we'll try to make some sense of what's happening here. Not easy to navigate, but we'll try our best this morning. So Mark is writing, "But in those days, after the tribulation, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light." Now, before I continue on, let me just remind you about prophecy, you know, and the Bible. A lot of times, prophecy and the Bible had both near future and distant future aspects. And it was not always easy for us to understand how to tell those two events apart. I've mentioned last week, and next time I'm in D.C., I'm going to try to go out and risk my life to take a picture of the White House. I mentioned how there's a place on 16th Street, if you stand or you're driving, the White House has a dome on it. Well, the White House has no dome. That's the Jefferson Memorial Dome, but it looks like it's sitting right on the White House, even though there's all this distance between the two. So we need to understand there's a present reality or near future reality, and oftentimes there's a distant reality within this. And we're seeing that in this chapter also. So he says, "But in those days, after the tribulation, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. And then they will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. And then he will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven." Now, when we stop here and we just take a look at this, this certainly seems like distant future. So he's talking about the destruction of the temple, and then we're now moving into something that really seems like it's talking about a distant future. And we talk about this. We talked about this when we did a study of the book of Revelation. We talked about the end times, you know, when it talked about the coming of Jesus Christ to set up his kingdom. So as he's finishing this, and this is from Daniel, now he's moving into a parable about the fig tree in verse 28. "From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts out its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near at the very gates." Now, sometimes the fig tree in the Bible is referenced to Israel, which would have been earlier when we saw Jesus cursing the fig tree in Mark's gospel. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's always about Israel. And this is probably just an agricultural saying. Luke doesn't even mention that it's a fig tree, just says trees. Now, in Israel, in Jerusalem area, the trees tend to be evergreen trees. The only tree that really loses its leaves during the year, the fig tree. So actually it's showing seasons. So the idea is it's talking about seasons. So it's kind of an agricultural proverb, if you will. And we should understand that we have those in our country. Like, how do you know that corn is growing at the proper rate? It has to be knee-high by the 4th of July. Anybody ever hear that phrase? Okay, you guys got to get out more. Okay, so when you're driving around and it's 4th of July, that corn should be at least knee-high. It should be a little bit higher. So it's about, you know, it's about timing. And Jesus is basically saying, when you start seeing these things, you know that his coming is at hand. Now, when Jesus says his coming is at hand, that just means that it's the next big event coming. It's the next big thing on God's agenda. God's timing and our timing never seem to align up. There's another, not a biblical proverb, but it does seem to hold truth. It is that God's timing, that God is never late, but he's seldom early, right? So we have to understand it is about God's timing. Now, so far, this seems to be going okay. All right, so we have this prophecy. We're seeing, you know, that the about his coming. And then verse 30 and 31, well, if Jesus just would have stopped talking, we could have been okay, but he kept talking, and now it confuses us a little bit. And he says this, "Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place." You know, when I read this in the commentaries that are basically books that explain passages, you should see the gymnastics they do to try to figure out what this is. And basically, the conclusion of the commentaries that I have is that he's referring back to the destruction of the temple, because that's the question that they asked. All these things refers to the temple. There's a little bit of a problem with that. It doesn't actually fit the context, because he talks about the destruction of the temple, and then he talks about all these other things, and then he says all these things will take place. And actually, it's in connection immediately with what preceded the passage. So did all that stuff take place? And what does he mean? Maybe we're all generation. Sometimes people say, well, you know, generation could mean, you know, eons, or, you know, I'm like, hey, you're still, let's just try to be simple here. Now, some said, well, you know, it's kind of a misstatement. Jesus didn't actually quite mean all things. He meant that thing. He just kind of misspoke. Well, the problem is 31. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. So, you know, he's actually emphasizing his accuracy. All right, so I pace, because I don't like things untidy. I like to tie things up. So I paced with this. And I don't know that this is an answer that explains all of it, but this is the answer I'm going to give to you. Because remember, we interpret the prophecy as near future, distant future. It can have a near future fulfillment as well as a distant future fulfillment. So I'll give you this. In Acts chapter 2, the disciples are meeting up in the upper room. The Holy Spirit comes in, sweeps in. Tongues of fire appear and land on the tongues of all the people. They go out. They're speaking in tongues. It's early in the morning. Everybody thinks they're drunk with new wine. So just a little sidestep here. You know, some people say, well, you know, the wine in the Bible wasn't alcoholic, especially if it was new wine. No, they said they were drunk with new wine. And so people, because some people are thinking, they heard them in their own language, but then they heard these people, I don't know what they're saying. Well, I do, because that's my tongue, you know. So there's a lot of stuff that's happening here, a lot of chaos. And then Peter gets up, and he shares the first sermon of the church age, which I like to point out is just this amazing thing, because as Christ was being crucified, he denies Christ three times. But now, because he is forgiven and restored by Christ, he gets to preach the first sermon. Cool. And this is what he says. In verse 14 of chapter 2, "But Peter, standing with the 11, lifted up his voice and addressed them, 'Men of Judea and all who dwell in Jerusalem, let this be known to you, and give ear to my words. For these people are not drunk, as you suppose, since it is only the third hour of the day. But this is what was uttered through the prophet Joel.'" So he's laying out a case that what he's about to say is a fulfillment of Joel. Remember, it's the Holy Spirit coming. He's now going to share Joel's prophecy. Verse 17. "And in the last days it shall be, God declares, that I will pour out my spirit on all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams. Even on my male servants and female servants in those days, I will pour out my spirit and they shall prophesy. Well, that certainly seems to fit the context of what's happening there, isn't it? So Joel, he's sharing the prophecy of Joel. He's telling them that what they're seeing is that prophecy fulfilled, the pouring out of God's Spirit. And they are out in the streets and they are prophesying. And then Peter continues. And I will show wonders in heavens above and signs on the earth below, blood and fire and vapor of smoke. And the sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon to blood before the day of the Lord comes, the great and magnificent day. Oh, and now, what is this about? So is this future? Well, it does have a future to it because there's a near future and then there's a distant future. When Jesus was crucified, did it become dark? Mm-hmm. When it talks about the moon turning to blood, that's actually known as a blood moon, and it actually references a lunar eclipse. And on April 3rd of 33 AD, which was the time that they actually think Jesus may have actually been crucified, there was a lunar eclipse. There was an earthquake, things shaken. Yep. And when the earthquake happened, graves were open. I mean, there's all kinds of things that are happening. And when Peter is talking about all these things, they're probably going, yeah, a lot of weird things have been happening. So you see, it's kind of fitting into what Jesus was saying. So that generation did see all of this. Is there a future part to it? Well, sure, when you read other parts of the Bible, yes, you see that this played out also. And it shall come to pass that everyone who calls upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. That seems to be pretty good, but you know, Jesus didn't mention the four angels going out to the four corners. I mean, the angels going to the four corners of the earth and collecting the elect and seeing Jesus in his glory in the clouds, right? What Mark talks about. Well, what about that? Well, Acts chapter 1, verse 6 and 9. So, after Jesus' resurrection, he meets up with his disciples, and so they had come together. They asked him, Lord, will you at this time restore the kingdom of Israel? I'm thinking, will you guys stop? He's got to be thinking, okay, will you just stop with those questions? I keep talking to you about this, and you keep asking the same question. And he said to them, it is not for you to know times and seasons that the Father has fixed by his own authority. Basically, he is telling them, this is above your pay grade. This isn't for you to know. This isn't the most important thing for you guys to be asking about and worrying about. And then he goes on. And he says this, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. If you want to paraphrase this, maybe the four corners of the earth. And angels, the Greek word actually can mean heavenly being or it can mean messenger. And then when he said these things, as they were looking, he was lifted up and a cloud took him out of the sight. So there's a lot that's going on here. Could this be part of that generation scene? I think it probably could be. Is there still a future aspect to this? Well, yes. Because he's telling us to watch, to stay awake, to be on our guard. So let's go back to Mark chapter 13. Verse 32, but concerning that day or that hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. Be on guard, keep awake, for you do not know when the time will come. Again, he's telling them, this isn't the important thing. It's going to happen. It is important, but it's not the most important thing for you to know. And then he tells another parable. It is like a man going on a journey when he leaves home and puts his servants in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to stay awake. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening or at midnight, or when the rooster crows, or in the morning, lest he come suddenly and find you asleep. And what I say to you, I say to all, stay awake. He's basically telling them to be on their guard, to stay awake, to stay alert to what they are supposed to be doing. Stop focusing on when he's going to return, because either one, you're going to be so focused on that, you're not going to be doing what you're supposed to be doing now, or you're going to go, well, it's going to take forever for Christ to come back. It's not going to happen in my lifetime, so you're not going to be doing what you're supposed to be doing also. And he's used this illustration of years, if your boss leaves and comes back, if the master house comes back when you don't know it, you could find yourself asleep. You can find yourself in the trouble because you're supposed to be watching for him, looking for him, doing the things that he expects you to be doing, but he finds you kind of wanting. Now, when I was in high school, senior in high school, and then through college, one of the things I did to earn a little bit of extra money was I house sat. And I would house sit, you know, sometimes it would be a day or two, sometimes it would be, you know, a week. I've watched senior adults, I've watched pets. One time a dog died while I watched it, so I don't watch dogs anymore. You know, it's just really terrible when you tell people, oh, by the way, your dog died. You know, it just, and so, you know, there's so many, you know, that I did that throughout, it was a nice little extra money, plus I got to be alone. So there's a time that the family, they left for 2 weeks. That's a long gig. And so, you know, I did my usual thing the first couple of days, you know, kind of keeping up on things, and I thought, okay. So, but then I was like, okay, I'll just do the dishes all at once. I'll just use them all. So they just start stacking up in the sink. And I could wash my clothes in their washer and dryer, and I thought, well, you know, you can wear clothes a couple times before they, you know, because a teenager, remember? Yeah, you can wear those until they start standing up on their own, right? So I started that, and the laundry's kind of catching up, and I was doing homework, and papers were scattered all over their kitchen table. And Thursday, I was thinking, well, you know, they're going to be here on Saturday. I probably should start cleaning. I should just go ahead and get this start going, so I don't have to rush. And I'm looking at my watch, and I'm thinking, well, you know, I'll do that this evening. What I would do is so a friend and I, we went out to eat. I think we went to, like, Wendy's and had a burger. And I drove back. They came home 2 days early. Their car was sitting in the driveway. And I was like, oh, no, 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 no. Because, actually, I still had homework to do. And it was the most embarrassing moment to walk in there. And they're washing dishes, you know, I'm picking up things. I'm like, I'll do that. Nope. I know this comes as a surprise to you. They never asked me to watch their house again. And even though I had watched it a whole bunch of other times, and it was, you know, it was always good when they got back, but that one time, because I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing, and I thought I had time, I wasn't paying attention. And there were no cell phones back then to say, hey, we're coming back early, because everything was long distance. We're supposed to stay awake as Christ followers. And you have to decide what that looks like. What does it look like for you to be awake as a Christ follower in your community, in your family, in your workplace? Does that mean that you need to start paying attention to a certain individual around you who just is desperately in need of a friend? Does it mean that maybe staying awake means that your work productivity needs to increase so that you can show that you work even when the boss isn't around? Does it mean that you pay attention to your neighbors and try to find out more about them without being prying and showing that you care about them? Whatever it is, you have to decide if you are going to live as a fully awakened Christian, what does that look like in your context?